Welcome to episode 4 of our 5-part Visionary Club special series, recorded live during the IAA conference at IAA Mobility 2025 and brought to you exclusively for our podcast listeners. In this episode, Hannah Baumgarten, Open Innovation Manager at Plug and Play, Anna Buchmann, CEO at NOCA, and Frank Aldorf, co-founder and CIO at Lemo Future, talk about strategic growth opportunities and investment potential in the bicycle and urban mobility industry. Sit back and enjoy.
I'm Hannah. I will be, of course, the host. Usually, I'm an open innovation manager for a global VC and an innovation platform. So I have a little bit insights, of course, in this direction, but it's not about me. It's about my panelists. So I'm really happy to have you here, Frank. You're like a brand expert and strategic growth experts already a lot of years, but now you're working for an e-bike company, Lemo, do I say it the right way? And you're actually supporting them to grow, to have the right branding and the right placement. And we will speak a little bit more about your experience. Thank you for being here and maybe give him a warm applause.
Thank you.
And then Anna, CEO and co-founder from Noka, just learned actually it's like no car because you started with hardware. Now you're fully in the digital world, actually making the transparency of the data for the whole supply chain for the bike industry. And really, really excited to hear about the activities you do around transparency, how you actually help your clients to save money and actually how it is a no-brainer actually to collaborate with you guys. So thank you for coming over from Hamburg.
Thank you.
Please give them a warm applause. So maybe to kick off the topic, a little bit on a personal note, like why are you in the industry? When did you actually realize that you really want to drive like the change in mobility and to reimagine actually how we come from A to B? Maybe Frank, you sit next to me.
Okay.
To start.
As you said, I'm in the business a little longer already, so it's not something from that I have to point out three moments. Mm-hmm. And the first one is probably like 15 to almost 20 years ago when I helped launch smart cars in Germany and in Europe, and seeing this micro car and how it changed people's mind and how it changed people's behavior as well. So that was for me one of the first moments of like how you you can change things by providing a different product and get people excited about this. The second moment would be launching the first e-bike when I was at Specialized. Mm-hmm. So again, like seeing how e-mobility and the bike, the perception of people and bikes really changed with the e. So that's the second one. And the third one would be every time a study comes out that talks about all the other additional benefits of being on a bike or on a pedal assist product, and its health, its environment, its society. So these three things keep me going in this industry.
Amazing. Thank you so much for this. And how many bikes do you own?
At the moment, it's around 10 in my garage. So that's excluding the ones from my wife or my kids, but it's, you collect a little bit of different types of bikes.
It's a good number. Always morning deciding which bike you take to work perfectly. Anna, what is your perspective and how many bikes do you own?
So I have one bike. I actually do own a Lemo. It's one bike for everything. If it's my choice in the future, I will have three: a gravel, an e-bike, and a cargo bike. But I think my moment of how I ended up in mobility, and I haven't been in the industry as long as Frank has been. I did hear, though, once you're in it, you never get out. So I am looking into a very bright future. Before I co-founded Noka in my previous life, I was working with entrepreneurs all over the world, and I spent a year and a half in India. And at that time in 2015, India mobility for a person like me who wasn't from the place was actually quite challenging. Taking the bus, taking the bike, driving around was something I was very uncomfortable doing in a massive city of 30 million people.
Yeah.
And I think it's when I realized how important mobility is for everyday life. And then I came back to Berlin and it was just so easy to go into the tram, take my bike, go around the city at 4 a.m. in the morning, not having to worry how I get home. And I think that was for me a pivotal moment to say, you know what, the bike industry, I accidentally got into the bike industry, all full transparency, but it's so worthwhile to make every single mode of transport accessible for everyone when they need it. So I'm super proud that I actually ended up right here.
Beautiful. And we're really, really happy to have you in this industry, actually. So looking at you both companies and in your opinion, so of course, a lot of people speak about biking and all this like micro-mobility. It's a boom right now. It's a trend and everybody goes over it. If you're 30, you get a bike. Blah, blah, blah. But how do we really make it as like a approved business model, approved mobility for the future? Frank, if you want to start.
Proof mobility for the future.
It's like future-proof mobility. It's our topic, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah, I think that you have to, I think we have to rethink the city.
Yeah.
And to me, it's like the city needs to become an operating model, operating system. And within this future-proof mobility would mean that any journey below 7K, sub 7K, mm-hmm. would default into micro-mobility. And this then would mean that actually the system works. And what it means that it works is that you have protected lanes, you have safe spaces for all the different vehicles. You have curb space that is really dynamically priced for parking, for charging, for locking. Mm-hmm. And you have one entry point, one app that does it all. You have a modular product. I think that then would be everything would work in future-proof mobility.
So it's really like having one network and different players really come together to make sure it's seamless. Great.
Exactly.
Anna, what is your perspective?
I'd love to build on that analogy, Frank, that you gave for the city. So maybe just an FYI, my perspective is usually from the industry. So I've gotten the insight of how do different players in the industry work. And the same ecosystem and the same kind of flows that you need, we also need in the industry, and especially with data.
Yeah.
That's both inside a company, data needs to be properly managed. It needs to flow freely to be the groundwork for functioning processes, for functioning supply chains, for functioning teams. And I think that looking behind the curtain and understanding where are the blockers, mm-hmm. what do we need to do to be future proof? We can discuss on what that means and acting on that. If you look at cycling as an industry, you see that growth has been super constant for decades. It's super reliable. It's very steady. And then obviously we had this spike during Corona and then the fall afterwards. And I think, and I hope what we learn is that these kind of external factors and automotive, I guess it would be the tariffs. It would be semiconductors at some point. I think a future-proof industry needs a functioning process. It needs a functioning data ecosystem and it needs a functioning company. And that mm-hmm. ecosystem inside the company and across the supply chain, I think is what can then build the groundwork for exactly that.
Mm-hmm. And this makes it perfectly to our next topic, right? Like for future-proof, you need to scale and you need to grow. And looking a little bit at the data, I think now e-mobility or e-bikes growing around 12% each year. This is, of course, a really good number, but kind of continuing on you, Anna, like with like the supply chain. There are so many pieces around a bike, and to be efficient, you somehow need to know where are the things coming from, how to be more efficient. So maybe you can say a little bit more what maybe Noka is doing and what you actually see in the industry.
Yeah. So with Noka, we are providing a system to manage product data in the first place. It's actually pretty simple. It has been out there. You know exactly what are the different parts in a bike, how do they come together, how are they being produced, and which bike then contains what part. And that's the groundwork for then have service, for have proper marketing and sales, to have compliance processes built on top. And what we do different is that we're industry specific. That means in the end, we're building industry specific data models. And these data models allow for processes to be fine-tuned to the needs of industries.
Yeah.
No matter if it's cycling, if it's sports goods, if it's furniture, this can be applied anywhere. And then I'm going to drop the buzzword that everyone is talking about. With these kind of data models, AI is going to be so much more useful. Because what we see now in an industry, no matter if cycling or not, there is a shit in, shit out problem. Excuse my French. So if you don't have a proper database and a proper data model, you're going to train agents on the wrong things.
Yeah.
Because how are they supposed to learn, or how do they know industry specific information that's not available on the internet? So your data internally in a company is so significant and so useful and valuable that you should make sure it's in the right structure. And that's basically what we're doing for component suppliers, for manufacturers, and then we push it into the end of the supply chain. And in terms of transparency and efficiency, obviously all of that builds into automation. It builds into having a proper data quality, making sure that whatever information is at the start of the supply chain gets to the end and you have that transparency back and forth.
And this really helps then as well to scale, right?
Like, exactly.
Then you actually don't like end up with the things you maybe still have to fix or figure things out, but you can scale your business. You can build faster and cheaper at the end.
I've seen examples where a manufacturer all of a sudden was missing 25 years on their bill of materials, or on kind of the recipe for their bicycle. And then if you built 100,000 models, those 25 euros matter.
Yeah.
That is something you really want to make sure you know where that goes. And just backtracking that because there was no data system in place was incredibly painful. And honestly, that kind of time and that pain you can save. It's unnecessary.
Oh, great. And I think this efficiency is a big thing, but as well to scale and growth and going more on your expertise, like having a strong brand, I think is really, really helpful as well for customer decisions. What kind of bike I want to buy? For the ones who maybe are not the experts on every piece of the bike. What is your experience right now to support younger brands to really stand out in the industry?
Yeah, it's really something really hard because it's an oversaturated market. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's a mix out of, I would call it edge and an engine. So the edge is then, it's best to look at a market that's underserved.
Yeah.
And within this underserved market, you look at a micro segment, and then you like laser sharp cater to this segment, because you will not be able to outshout in such an oversaturated market. You will not be able to outshout your competition, but you can outsharpen the competition. And so you cater to this micro segment really, really well with a hero product. You have like 2-3 non-negotiables that have to be in this product, and you provide like an outstanding design language that people can spot right away from 30 meters away, or and get in like 2 seconds when they see it. I would say it's easy in this environment because a lot of things look very much the same, and that's kind of where you build your edge. Mm-hmm. And then the engine would be, you not only want to create like a hero product, but you want to create like a platform. You want to then create an operating system that has connectivity, that has over the air features, other, finance options, theft protection, and so on. And this operating system is then, combined with the hero product, how you differentiate in this. And next to the operating system, you build equity in community, you want to have like a D2C model.
What you're saying is like not look and feel is only needed. You need the whole system.
Yeah, you need a system.
But it's a piece of it really plays it right.
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect. And I think this builds perfectly on sustainable business models. Like what I just mentioned, like 60% of emissions come from transportation. Bikes could we apply in cities, but of course you have to make money out of it. Any extra thoughts from your boss in this direction, how to really create a sustainable business model for the bike industry?
Do you want to start?
Please?
You since don't fight. Sorry?
Don't fight.
Oh, okay. You can start.
No, I think a sustainable business model to me is something where where your cash flows are actually, circular as the materials that you use, right? So you look at, for me, I think I would look at three different areas, which one would be recurrencies with the kind of over-the-air features and so on. I would look at resale, so right from the start, in terms of second life fleets and so on, pre-certified ownership. And then thirdly, it's repair. And that's what you mentioned earlier, is that like how you build these products, and probably you want to use components that are widely used and not like, very specific, because that broke a lot of companies already the neck. So, yeah.
I like the circularity thought as well, like how to bring it back in the system. So I think this is a really good point.
Yeah.
Thank you. Anna, do you have anything to add on?
I think the only thing I would add is when we look at companies and analyze how they're doing from obviously a data perspective, we always look at people, processes, and solutions. Forget solutions. There's loads of software providers out there, right? So I think in order to have a sustainable business model, what really needs to happen is as well, look at your processes. Don't just look at how can I make more money, but how can I save money? And I think it's a widely overlooked area where companies can become so much more efficient, so much more cost effective. Because when you see what sometimes happens in these processes that haven't been properly set up, or people haven't been trained on them, and that's a people perspective, you can see saving potentials of six figures. That's crazy to me, because it's an easy thing. It's not going, oh, I need a new product, I need to go into a new market. But in my existing setup, I actually have a lot of cost savings that I can do. So that's the only thing I would add to what Frank has already said.
Of course, we don't want to sell your company. But let's say if somebody collaborating with you, is it a return on investment for them to get your data set up the right way?
I mean, of course. Like, I can't say no.
Perfect, right?
But it doesn't matter if it's our solution for a small startup. Yep. It might still be an Excel sheet. It's just from the very beginning, think about these things. Don't over-engineer. As a startup, you have to survive.
Yeah,
that's your own goal. You survive.
But think about how you can scale.
Exactly. And I think there's this point, or there's this, usually there's throughout the journey, there's breaking points where your current systems don't work. And if you have a good basis and you need to go to the next breaking point and to the next level, you have a much easier time to then implement the processes, solutions, and train the people on the thing that you need for the next scaling, if that makes sense.
This is a good thing that I'm working for a VC company. So I looked a little bit how is the money right now flowing? And I just found good numbers for micromobility. I think it's like $2.7 right now invested in it. I think it's a really good number. But a little bit in your direction, because of course, if you want to grow your company, or you build your startup, you build products, how is currently your viewpoint on investments? Is like VC money enough? Of course, you make money if you sell bikes. How is it with venture clienting, with partnerships? What is your perspective right now? Maybe Anna, you can start, because you have a few business angels in your team. Not in your team, but as your investors.
They're part of the team.
Yeah.
So I would say that cycling or micromobility, there's two trends and they're conflicting, because nothing in this world makes sense, right? So you have the investors who have been burnt in the past with the micromobility solutions, especially during Corona, a lot of money flowed into the industry and that has evaporated. And then on the other side, you have this trend where when you look at the growth of cycling, for example, it is super sustainable. It's almost a safe bet. And I think it is an industry ready for disruption, because it has been relatively conservative for such a long time. And they now need to do things. There is regulations coming. There is electrification coming. There is more digitalization coming. So there's so many things that can happen. I think that makes it a really exciting space. And the one thing I believe, or two things I believe, I think micromobility and cycling needs to build their own early stage investment ecosystem. I think that's gravely missing. And number two, I think we can learn from automotive in how corporates are working with startups. So obviously we're a B2B software startup from Berlin, who would have thought? But in Berlin, there used to be so many programs between automotive corporates who would get in startups, and they would help them work with the business units, understand how they can get into these large companies to place their products or develop solutions. And I wish for our industry that our players start doing this, because as an industry to grow, to innovate, and to become future-proof, we need startups and we need to actively support these startups.
In both directions, right? Like the corporation needs the startups as well to innovate and stay long-term interesting. And the other way, the startups need
to
partner
in there.
Growth.
Yeah.
Perfect. And then I come to you, Frank, about, let's say the investors you have, do you like, what is the most benefit? Of course, money is always nice, but as well the strategic input from them, or is right now the status more, okay, we need the money from the investors?
Money is always great. Money helps grow a business, but I think it depends on the stage. We don't have big strategic investors yet, but we have people from the industry and they have been essential in making introductions and getting us through the door. Just putting me in front of some of their networks has been ultra helpful.
And like a proof, like they're invested in you, they believe in it.
Exactly, exactly. So obviously as a startup, you also want to be careful. We are a platform. We don't want to side with one company from the industry. But I think if you can manage a very good balance between financial investments and the investors who will help you scale from a financial perspective, so they might help you fundraise in the future, plus having investors who understand the industry, who can get you in the right networks, who help you grow and get clients, my absolutely, excuse my French again, wet dream is that someone is taking me around Eurobike. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, everyone knows them and is saying, look, this is Anna, you need to test this solution. Mm-hmm. That's what helps me more than 50. No, that's not true. That helps me more than
that. You want both.
Exactly. I want it all.
Nice. And then Frank, because you work with corporations, right? Like mm-hmm. big automotive companies. NIO, I think, is one of your partners. How is this going? Is it like a strategic partnership? Are they invested? And what would you say as well to other, maybe other bike companies? What would be your suggestion?
Yeah, I mean, I can say this way. I think strategic partnerships, I totally believe in it. Mm-hmm. And these are growth drivers. I like venture clienting. What I like about this is it's not the strategic capital. I think it's the commercial access you're getting is what really is the primary lever there. So it's not the capital itself, but it's the commercial access you're getting.
So as well, access to their customers?
For example, yes. You mentioned NIO, and that was what we now had with Lemo Zero, our second product. And so this was a whole new experience. And to me, something like this, and you mentioned like more of these bigger corporations is needed much more. We need to work more together. And this is a good example, and it was, yeah.
Lemon Zero was this foldable bike?
Yeah, it's the foldable bike, and mm-hmm. It was offered to the NIO customers first, mm-hmm. And their whole ecosystem, and they have a shop there, and it's only for NIO customers in
it's
China.
It's much more lifestyle product, right? If I go from A to B for work, I can fold my bike.
Yeah, it's the idea of 4+2, so you're extending the range, so you have a mm-hmm. four-wheel drive somewhere, and then you continue the journey on two wheels.
So kind of combining mobility with mobility.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. Love it. A little bit looking at the time, we have 6 more minutes, and I have more questions, but I thought maybe somebody in the room has a question. Anyone has a question to Frank and Anna? Easy. I have 3 more questions. Don't. So you want to stop it? No. Is there a question? Perfect. Easy. Then I have a question. 4 more, actually. But we will, I think, maybe try through Muma. So, vision, future outlook. What do we... Or when you like looking ahead for 2030 or 2040, 2050, you can look so much in the future you want. What does the future-proof mobility look for you? Frank.
Yeah, I think that's what I said earlier already. So it's like the city becomes the city becomes this operating model, like an OS, and within this, you know, everything that's below 7K is micromobility, defaults to micromobility. Mm-hmm. And this only happens if the whole system works, and it works when certain things are in place that I mentioned earlier already.
Yeah.
And if this happens, then micromobility solutions become the default for everything under 7K. So that will be a dream. It's probably not 2030, but it will. We get there eventually, and I have high hopes. So
I think it's good to dream, right? Like, and you have your North Star where you want to go.
Yeah,
and you can make the decision in the right direction.
Yeah, if we fail, then this is the biggest proof that we're the dumbest species on this planet Earth.
So we gave all the best to. Good failing is good as well. Anna, and you can dream.
So I would look at it through four different lenses. I would look at mobility to be safe, accessible, sustainable, and affordable. Safe in terms of no matter which mode of transport I choose, I can do it without feeling flattened on the road. Accessible, there's mobility for every use. And I think multimodal, what you were saying, Frank, is kind of essential here. Sustainable, both in the way that mobility is powered, but also in the way that mobility vehicles are produced. I think when you look at the supply chain, it can be quite shocking. What's happening across the board, doesn't matter which one. No. And affordable is pretty straightforward, that I can find the right mobility solution for my situation, no matter what that situation is.
I like this point, especially when it rains. It really helps to know how you come from A to B. Yeah. And now on your experience, let's say if somebody, a startup, a founder, wants to go in the industry, what kind of tips and tricks would you give them to support them actually, maybe out of your own like failures, not to do the same failures again? Anna, you want to start?
Probably two things. And I speak very specifically about cycling because that's where I have the most experience. Network the hell out of it. Literally go to all of the events, speak to all of these people. I went up to a CEO of one of the biggest suppliers, if not the biggest suppliers in the motor and transmission part of the cycling industry. And I just said, hey, my name is Anna. This is what we're doing. I'd love to speak to you. Now we're doing a project with them. And I think I can do that because they have somehow heard of me and people do kind of talk around and say, oh, this is what they're doing. So building that reputation and really being present and networking. And number two, if something doesn't work, let it go and let it go early. We tested different business models and I now in retrospective, and you're always smarter in hindsight, would say that we should have let that business model go a little bit earlier.
Nice. Thank you so much. Frank, what learnings can you share?
Yeah, I think I came into this industry like from a very different background. And I think it's good to get this outside perspective and really not trust everything that you're going to like people talk about and just try to change things. And this industry needs to go from, it's not the bike industry. And I don't see us, for example, not as the next bike company, but as a micromobility company. So this already changes the perspective of what you want to achieve, and you're becoming a part of a larger ecosystem. And so, you know, go into this with an open mind and really challenge all the things that are there, because it's very old and fragmented, and we need to have a new approach to it. So, yeah, just come in this industry; it's needed. And I have high hopes that this is we're gonna change it. Yeah.
Beautiful. For the last seconds, we already talked about actually our closing question, but I will give you now one sentence you can give to the audience, something they should take away from our talk today. You have 25 seconds to think and speak at the same time.
Cycling is ripe for innovation. Come go get it by either investing or starting your idea. Let's go.
Let's go. Frank.
let's move this micro-mobility thing forward and not get stuck in the old world. I think that's what I would say, and help to change completely mobility in the future. Yeah.
Perfect. With this, thank you both so much for your time and coming over to Munich. Thanks everybody for listening in and have a beautiful time at EAA.
Thank you for listening. Stay tuned for the next and last episode of our Visionary Club special series featuring Stefanie May, Director at Women Automotive Network, Mandy Bubinger, Managing Director Czech Republic and Slovakia at Renault Trucks, Sabine Scheunert, Managing Director Central Europe at Dassault Systems, and Tanja Kassal, Chief Cybersecurity Governance Engineer at Carrier.